You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
Hey, Majority Report listener, this episode of the Majority Report, in fact, this month's episodes of the Majority Report is sponsored by Credo Mobile. Join America's only progressive phone company. Credo Mobile funds Credo Action, which lobbies on all the issues that you care about. TPP, NSA reform. They fight the Koch brothers. They fight things like ALEC. They've raised $78 million since 1985 for progressive nonprofit groups like the ACLU, the Sierra Club, and the Union of Concerned Science. Credo has also been the largest corporate donor to Planned Parenthood with more than $2 million in donations over the years. Here's the simple math. The more progressives who join Credo Mobile, the harder it can fight and the more it can contribute to progressive nonprofits. They are making an incredible deal for Majority Report listeners this month. $100 off of any phone plus 25% off your data plan fees for 1 year. Also, if you're stuck in somebody else's contract, or I guess your own contract, but with some other carrier, they will give you up to $350 per line credit on your Credo bill towards an early termination fee. They will also give you up to $300 in trading credit for your current phone. You can check out an estimate of your phone's value at credomobile.com/trade-in. But the bottom line, all of this is available if you go to credomobile.com/majority report. Check out the special deal for Majority Report listeners. You can also call 800-966-1665. Use the offer code 501-882. Check it out. We also have a link at majority.fm, of course. But Credo Mobile, they're a great phone company that works and shares the same values as you do. Check it out again, credomobile.com/majority report.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, June 5th, 2015. My name is Matt Binder. Whoa, wait, what? Why aren't you up? Why can't we hear you? Is that on over there? I turned it on, but... Then it was left on and I turned it off.
Smooth move, Matt.
There we go.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is the award-winning, the Majority Award.
Yeah, the four-time award-winning, as you can hear.
You know why are we winning those awards. Yeah. It's because we're so well-produced.
That's correct.
Well, this show is broadcasting to you steps. I almost did the old one. From the Gowanus Canal.
Industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal.
In the heartland of Brooklyn, USA.
In the heartland of America, Brooklyn, USA.
I can't do it right
on today's program, a pre-recorded interview with Sam Steeder and the great Charlie Pierce. Then...
Yeah, don't worry. This is the last time you'll be hearing us on the first half.
Well, on the fun half, we return. Matt will reclaim his dignity. The tech problems will be solved. And we have more great stories coming at you, like Mike Bloomberg wants to run for president. What?
Also, a viral tale going around the internet of a guy who wants everyone to know that Jenner is not really a hero.
Mm.
And we'll
find out who the real heroes are. We also got some news from Yemen and some news from Nigeria. Also, please join us with your calls and your IMs. That will make the fun half so much more fun, everybody. Okay, we're going to take a brief break. And we'll be right back with Sam and Charlie Pierce.
So, folks, I've talked about Harrys.com in the past. All of you know, maybe, I don't know if you all know, but it's longtime listeners know I don't like to shave. It's one of the few reasons why I don't like to go on television, because I don't like to shave. But when I shave, I want a good shave. And I don't think I ever really genuinely had one, because frankly, I would cheap out a little bit on getting razors, because I wasn't going to spend like $40 on those. The ones that come in the huge like plastic tanks you get at the drugstore. So when Harry's came to us wanted to advertise on the show, they sent me a razor, and it's great. It really is. It's a great razor. You don't have to pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades. It's half the price at Harry's. And with Harry's, like I say, you get a better shave, apparently also for your legs, but from my experience, from your face, for your face. Here's the starter set. You get it, $15, you get a razor, a moisturizing shave cream, and three razor blades. And now with the promo code MajorityReport, you get $5 off of that. That's $10 for a razor, three razor blades, and shaving cream. They ship it right to your door for free. It's an awesome product. I don't know why it's taken so long, actually, for somebody to figure out how to do this properly. But go to Harrys.com now. Harry's will give you $5 if you type in the coupon code MajorityReport with your first purchase. Harrys.com, enter coupon code MajorityReport. Check out for $5 off. Start shaving better today. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is always a pleasure to welcome to the program. He writes the politics blog at Esquire magazine, also writes for Grantland, Charlie Pierce. Charlie, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Sam. It's good to be here.
So a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about, you know, over the course of the week that has stuck out for me. One that came out of Boston, this story of Usama Rahim, who, there has not been that much information coming out about him. He was shot dead in the street by was it Boston cops or FBI or some kind of joint? Who was it that shot him?
All right, I'm not exactly sure who fired the bullets, but it was a joint Boston PD FBI 24 hours a day, 7 days a week surveillance of this guy. And whoever it was he confronted, which is apparently what everybody who's seen the surveillance video that the cops, that the police and the FBI are showing to folks in the community said, I'm not exactly sure who killed him. but somebody within that network of folks who'd been following him.
Well, no, well, I mean, do we know why they were following him and like sort of like under what authority?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is very, very murky. The details of why are slowly starting to leak out. Apparently he not only on social media, but also on the phone with this guy, David Wright, who they arrested, who lived in Everett, had been talking about a plan to quote unquote, go after the boys in blue. There's some talk that originally he wanted to kill Pamela Geller. I mean, obviously, the details of this event are a little smoky right now.
Now, were the Boston police who were part of this, were they in uniform or were these all undercovers?
As near as I can tell, they were all undercover.
I mean, I don't know. It's obviously it's very early in this whole thing. And to a certain extent, you know, earlier in the week, or I guess maybe it was the end of last week, we interviewed Masha Gessen, who wrote the book on the Boston Marathon bombers.
Right.
And there was a couple of questions that seemed to be that in my mind got more validity when Janet Napolitano tried to address them in a I guess what was a book review of her review about what relationship the FBI had with the older brother, and I guess maybe that just sort of has me now on sort of like in my not quite tin foil hat, but there was a time I remember watching I can't remember what Dirty Harry movie it was. Maybe it was the first one, right? Where Dirty Harry is following the suspect and the criminal like 24 hours a day, and that it becomes like a question as to whether or not it's a violation of his civil rights. Like, I just think, there's so many things that we sort of take for granted, like, oh, yeah, of course there would be 24-hour surveillance on this guy by the FBI and the police department. Like, well, I don't even understand how that works. Or they have transcripts of him on the phone saying, well, I'm going to take out some guys in blue.
I mean, yeah.
It's amazing to me that we don't even sort of question, like, hey, wait a second. What? I mean, if we thought this guy was a terrorist, why were we just following him? Or under what authority does that happen?
Yeah, well, again, we don't know. I mean, did they have a warrant for the wiretap? Did they have, a FISA warrant for the wiretap? Nobody's saying anything about that. The details of the actual operation that pretty plainly went bad are very, very smoky. And at this point, I'm willing to accept what the community leaders who have seen the video say, that the guy actually did turn on the police and did actually brandish a weapon, which is not a smart thing to do.
No.
But as to why, there was this situation at all, except for the stuff that's coming out piecemeal from various quote-unquote folks familiar with the investigation, I don't have any idea.
Wow, it's interesting. It'd been lucky, and I think.
The history of the Boston FBI office has not been great over the last 30 years. So.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that in the context of all the Whitey Bulger stuff, this is, who knows? It's just, if past performance is any indicator of future results, right? I mean, it does make you skeptical about any of these stories. It is interesting, though, that one of the first things they did is they brought in local, I guess, Muslim leaders, right? As
yeah,
a way,
and other community activists, the local head of the Urban League and stuff. Yeah, which I thought was very smart.
Yeah, I mean, at least that shows some measure of sensitivity, I guess.
Yeah, because as you know, the person who got shot's brother was on, Facebook almost immediately saying that he'd been shot in the back, which turned out not to be true.
Right. Yeah, that's a strange story. It's going to be weird to see what comes out of it. And the last thing, that obviously I am not pro beheading Pamela Geller. But the idea that, she is sort of now being able to slowly change her image from essentially the leader of, like a hate group. Right. I mean, I don't know how else to characterize what she does.
No other way to characterize her. Now she's becoming an embattled First Amendment martyr.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's very problematic. I saw a part of a transcript on CNN that she did where, she's introduced as the head of some organization, which is like really the functional equivalent of saying like, Here is the president of the Association for White Pride. He's the head of the KKK.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think everybody who is working this story has to be very, very careful how they attribute stuff. I think it's interesting though that now apparently the feds have taken over the case completely. This guy David Wright, the guy who was actually arrested in Everett, he's been charged in federal court. So the U.S. Attorney's Office, which of course just got the conviction and the death sentence against Joe Karzanayev, is going to take care of this from now on.
And do we know
whatever local authority, obviously, I think now it's fairly easy to conclude that the Boston PD was in a support role to the FBI on this.
And do we know what this guy David Wright is being charged with?
He's actually being charged with obstructing an investigation related to a plot. Basically, what happened is on the wiretap on the phone, he gives Osama Rahim instructions to destroy his cell phone.
I see.
And so that's this guy is 6'8" and 500 pounds too, by the way. This guy may be the biggest guy in the history of federal courts.
Wow. Wow. No, I didn't know. I didn't realize that. So, well, I mean, it's interesting. I know you're in Boston, so I figured I would ask you about that because.
It's very interesting to me.
I brought it up this week, but it's very difficult to sort of get a sense of what's going on there. But let's.
Well, to me, and you've touched on this, the most interesting thing is how sensitive they are to like local feelings.
What do you think that's a function of? I mean, do you think that's a function of?
I think it's a function of Ferguson and Baltimore.
Right. Okay.
I think it's a function of the mass militarized response to the manhunt for the Tsarnaev brothers.
Give me your take on that, because from a distance, my sense was like it's a little bit weird that everything was shut down in the way that it was, but when I hear people from Boston talk about it, they're like, well, we were scared and, we didn't know.
I mean, I think, I don't think it would have happened had they not had a high speed chase where these guys were killing cops and throwing improvised explosive devices out the back window of the car.
Right.
In a residential neighborhood.
Right. It was interesting, though, to see how easy it was for them in some ways to shut down the city. Looking for these guys. But. All right. Well, let's talk about something that's a little bit more national in its scope. This week, I don't know. I guess it depends on which perspective you're coming from at any given time, because I think there's a lot of sort of ambivalence about the Freedom Act, which was essentially arguably reforming and certainly reauthorizing certain provisions of the Patriot Act this week. Some people are calling it a victory for Rand Paul. Some people are calling it a loss for Mitch McConnell. Like I say, there's a lot of ambivalence. You sort of zeroed in this week on the one thing that is sort of, I think, unambiguous that came out of this in terms of Edward Snowden.
Right. I mean, this doesn't happen without him. This doesn't happen without him and what he did. The conversation not only doesn't change, it doesn't take place. And I think the best thing to come out of this is that how we talk about these issues has changed. And there's a legitimate political constituency for reining in all of the stuff we did out of fear after the 9/11 attacks. How long that consensus will last, considering I think the Republicans are going to run a very hawkish primary campaign, I have no idea. But right at this moment in time, there is a constituency in the other direction.
I mean, if you were to graph it, like the waxing and waning of that constituency, how would it go? Because it is sort of amazing to me to think about the regime that we have now. I don't know that necessarily there's, obviously there's two components of this. One is, there's more than that, but one is that our technology over the past 15 years has happened to made it much, much easier and much more efficient for the NSA, for the FBI, et cetera, these agencies to spy on us. Simultaneously, their authority has been expanded. But it really, in many of these instances, they have the authority, just not the sort of the physical capacity to be as surveillance-y as they have become. A lot of what's happening now seems like in 1999, let's say, would have been it would have been unthinkable, right? I just wonder, is it waxing? Is it waning? Is this just a function of some people found it opportunistic at this time in the sort of the election cycle? What's going on?
I think it's all of those things. I think that almost every institution of the country is still trying to catch up with the communications revolution the last 20 years. Certainly newspapers are. I think government is. I think politics are. And I think, you know, I think that the technology has raced ahead of the Bill of Rights in a lot of ways. And this was one of them. And I think at this point, there is a little bit of a pushback coming. And I think that's all to the good.
And what happens with Snowden now? I mean,
I don't know. I think he stays in Moscow.
I mean, it seems to me, I mean, it's so hard to reconcile the idea that we just voted. Well, not just that we just had a vote where you've reformed part of the Patriot Act. You have a court decision a month ago, maybe a little bit less, saying that, the NSA was actually interpreting this in an illegal fashion. Or the government was interpreting what Congress passed in an illegal fashion. And simultaneously, Edward Snowden is a criminal as opposed to a whistleblower.
Well, I mean, it all depends on, you know, all depends on the administration. You know, that's whether or not they're prosecuted when he comes home. And apparently they're still dead set on it. You know, I think the president probably, I mean, as much as it sounds weird, I think the president's got to walk a very fine line with the intelligence community. And I think this is the bringing him home and pardoning him, I think, would be a bridge too far.
So when you talk about he's got to walk a line, extrapolate that. When you talk about he's got to walk
I think it's better for the president to have the surveillance community or the intelligence community on his side than not have it on his side. They can do a lot of damage, I would think, sub rosa, especially to a lame duck. So, I mean, I don't think politically within the executive branch it's tenable for him to double back now and say, okay, you know, the court has said this and the Congress has done that. So, you know, let's bring him home and pardon him and all will be well. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Is there any way that this guy can come back? Because
there's not without being prosecuted at the moment.
But I'm saying, like, even, you know, all right, so it's President Clinton. President, I guess maybe
it's... With a change in administration, sure. I mean, it's not going to happen under any of the Republicans, that's for sure.
Maybe President Sanders, or maybe President Chafee, I guess, based upon his announcement. Well, we'll talk about President Chafee, because I guess obviously that concept, I was also not terribly impressed. But where's like Ron Wyden to read some of this stuff into the record? Or where is, you know, like, where is, it just seems sort of shocking to me that Snowden's whistleblowing is implicit in all of these conversations. But nobody who's engaged in these conversations, at least nobody with any type of official capacity, nobody with any type of authority, explicitly states, like, hey, the only reason why we're talking about this and the only reason why that there's a debate about whether we reform or whether there's a court case or what it is because of what this guy did. And that makes it almost, how could you say that's not whistleblowing?
Well, no, I mean, I mean, if you want a kind of a stretch of a historical parallel, Ed Snowden is kind of like the John Brown of this. You know, hanging John Brown after the raid on Harper's Ferry was, you know, applauded by the country until the war started. And which, you know, at which point, you know, people decided that we weren't going to talk about John Brown, but we were going to talk about every issue he brought to the front. You know, I think, you know, Edward Snowden is the fire bell in the night, basically. But is he ever going to get credit for that from his own government? I'm not seeing it at the moment.
I mean,
whether that's right or wrong, I'm just not seeing it.
I mean, it's fascinating. On one hand, I can understand, like, okay, because ultimately, look, John Brown is celebrated as an important abolitionist, right? I mean,
right.
He and I can understand you've just hung him, and you're not going to talk about him, right? We're not going to talk about that. It's a mistake we can't go backwards on. But it's not like the book is closed on Edward Snowden because you know he keeps showing up, right? I mean, it's not like.
He's very visible.
Right. I mean, that's what's so weird about it to me is that he's just – it's like he's sitting in the room and everybody's having this conversation like he's not there.
It's a fascinating place in history to be. I guess we all benefit from what he's doing except a lot of us are terrible ingrates about it.
Is there a parallel? Because even, you mentioned John Brown, but that guy, he was dead. And so he's dead and you move forward. You don't talk about him because that's embarrassing to people. But it just seems to be the way even the media, I remember seeing this. I don't want to get too off on too much of a tangent, but I remember, back in, I guess it was 2011 or so. When the Chelsea Manning leaks happened through WikiLeaks, and people would say, like, there's nothing new here. We'd hear this over and over again for the media. There was a breach, but there's nothing new. And then literally for the next year, every time I would go in to do some type of hit on TV, it was based on a story that broke because and included documents from this WikiLeaks dump, but it was never pointed to that WikiLeaks dump. Right.
Yeah.
So it just sort of went down. It didn't even go down the memory hole. It was like, it was in a parallel track. We have the memory hole and we're still discussing what we supposedly forgot where it came from.
Right. That's a remarkable phenomenon in these. I mean, there's so much ambivalence, within the media, toward how this information came to our attention, that it doesn't exist, it doesn't exist within the context of the consequences that it's brought. You, as you pointed out, you didn't hear Edward Snowden's name in the debate over the USA Freedom Act.
And none of that
would not have occurred. Which would not have occurred.
Would not
had he not done what he did.
It's just a very strange. It's just a very strange dynamic, and I don't recall. Another time when I don't ever recall anything quite like it. I mean, I guess the WikiLeaks, was sort of a similar situation where we're going to pretend like we're going to build all these stories around this and we're going to pretend like it's news and it's important and we're informing the public. But we're still going to condemn the person who basically brought all this to you.
No, it's completely different, for example, from the Pentagon Papers,
right?
Where they were always sourced to Daniel Ellsberg. You know who the guy was, and anything we learned, subsequently learned from the Pentagon Papers, we learned because of Daniel Ellsberg, and that would be, that was always in, the second or third paragraph of any story that was prompted by the Pentagon Papers. Edward Snowden's name doesn't appear in any stories prompted by these. I mean, some of them it does. But very, very far down, and certainly not within the halls of power.
What do you think accounts for that? I mean, was there a lesson learned, or was there just something fundamentally different in society, or is it just that?
I think there's a reluctance on the part of elected politicians to give him credit for anything because they're afraid of getting traitor baited in the next primary or in the next general election.
Right.
That's the simplest answer I have.
Do you think that there seems to be a far less passion about this stuff than, say, let's say, the Pentagon Papers? I mean, I know that.
Well, the Pentagon Papers were historical, and a lot of it confirmed what people already suspected. This was about stuff that was going on now. And, of course, it engaged the kind of, intelligence community priesthood with its secret rites and its secret rituals. There was a substantial amount of pushback. I mean, even Richard Nixon realized on the Watergate tapes that the Pentagon Papers were a lot more damaging to the reputations of Kennedy and Johnson than they were to Nixon. Nixon was just ticked that they got leaked.
Right.
But in one of the tapes, he says quite plainly to Kissinger, look, this makes Kennedy and Johnson look bad. So I think the fact that it was ongoing, it makes a bit of a difference. And then, you know, if you're on the other side, you can play the you're endangering people's lives, you know, card.
Right. Do you think, I mean, I don't know if you read Rick Perlstein's last...
No, not the newest one, no.
But, you know, the thing that really stuck with me was the period of time, I guess, in the... was it in the 70s now? Was it in 75? Yeah, 75, I guess it was. There was something like 85. I may be getting my year off or two. But, you know, he points out there was like 85... you know, terrorist attacks in the United States. And that, I think it was in 75, like 20 people died at LaGuardia Airport from a bomb in the,
sure.
In the luggage, area. And that, you know, our response at that time was not to lock everything down. Like we're a much more frightened society, these days, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. And that's been the case for, you know, at least for 14 years now. And I think that, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of elements to that. And I mean, the instant communication, the fact that the people who gin up terror, you know, are a lot better at their jobs than the people who, you know, who go out and, you know, report the, you know, whether or not the thing is a serious threat or not. I mean, there's a lot of that, but I think we are more scared. And I think we've had 30 years of people telling us that our government can't do anything.
Right.
So, I mean, that's, you know, also a factor.
And I guess to a certain extent, everybody watched that second plane go into the town. Not everybody.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, every, you know, and then... And
people
then,
experienced it in a way that they didn't experience these things before.
Yeah, and then anthrax. Don't, you know, I mean,
right.
That sort of gets lost to history. But that was the second stage of the thing. You know, nobody, and, you know, people are still unclear as to what happened there. But you know that was you know the second thing to come that came by. But people were just in a blind panic in 2001.
I haven't
they
dug
the Patriot. They passed the Patriot Act without ever reading it.
Right. I haven't dug into it. But apparently, the CIA has been sending around, or the Defense Department has been sending around live anthrax for the past.
Yeah, I don't
decade.
Know what's going on. I don't know what's going on there. Whether it's a you know some sort of premium you get in the mail or something.
That's right. That's right. Instead of a tax rebate,
like the old Columbia Records one.
There you go.
You can get five, you know, loathsome diseases free as long as you buy, you know, nine in the next year.
I always thought it was for a penny.
it was for a penny, actually.
It was for a penny. I remember
time, too,
that was the big thing, right? You do it.
Yeah, you get like 12 albums, and then you'd have to buy like awful ones for the rest of the year.
Exactly. Then all of a sudden, it becomes much more narrow your choices. all right. Well, speaking of choices that are not narrow. Let's turn to the clown car a little bit because this week, well, all right, let's start with the Democrats first because now we have four candidates, official candidates. And was O'Malley this week or was he, I guess he was at the end of last week.
End of last week, yeah.
There's, you know, already we're getting stories that Bernie Sanders is more popular than people, imagined. Lincoln Chafee, I guess it was, Wednesday of this week. Gave his announcement that he was entering to the race, and you know, Metrics, I guess, was also on the list. I found that whole presentation to be a little bit unfortunate. I mean, I'm with him on a lot of that stuff, but it didn't seem very compelling to me.
I think Lincoln Chafee is the whitest man in the world. I mean, to quote Bette Midler, he makes me look third world. I mean, the man is so white he doesn't have a shadow.
Yeah,
I think he's being very close to invisible.
Yeah, it was, and just I don't know. I just think that, like, you know what? If you're interested in the metric thing, let that come up. Let that come up in the course of the campaign.
It.
Like, you know, like who is the person who's going to say, like, boom? I was waiting for a candidate to say metrics. Like, does he have any advisors? Is, you know,
well, maybe he's counting on that always vital, you know, in the Democratic primaries on that always vital, you know, math nerd demographic.
I guess.
Maybe he's going to arrange some vote fraud. We'll have, you know, people voting from around the world.
I found it a little bit disappointing because I think, you know, there's it would be nice to have someone temper the hawkish impulses of Hillary Clinton and even frankly, you know, it's you don't hear it so much from a sitting senator. It would be nice to hear someone who, you know, would just run on yeah. one thing. I just think that, you know, getting ahead of yourself to talk about bringing in the metrics system. But
maybe he figures we wouldn't have gone into Iraq if we were using the metric system.
I
don't know how that would work. I'm just throwing that out as a possibility.
I'm sure there's an alternate universe where back in the mid 70s, because that's when they tried to bring it in. I mean, as a kid, I remember, I don't know if it was like I was in second or third grade where it was basically like, you're getting the metrics. And so you better learn it. And we learned the metric system. And then like 6 months later, nobody was talking about it.
That's right, because it was, you know, it was contrary to American exceptionalism or something.
It was very strange. But all right. So let's talk about the Republican race. Rick Perry announces we're actually recording this Thursday. So he announced, I guess, today. Yes. I don't know if you saw any of what he had to say, but it was extremely populist. He said, I'm going to read a little bit because he may not have had a chance. Sure. And I don't know if people have caught up to it. The American people see a rigged game where insiders get rich and the middle class pays the tab. There's something wrong when the Dow is near record highs and business on Main Street can't get a loan. Since when did capitalism involve the elimination of risk for the biggest banks while regulations strangle our community banks? Capitalism is not corporatism. He goes on like this. He's wearing glasses now as a way, I guess, presumably to get away from, you know, former Governor Oops. But is there any room for this guy this time around?
You always have to keep in mind also that what Rick Perry is running for essentially is the president of the Confederate States of America. If you go back through, I mean, he's a dyed-in-the-wool tenter. He doesn't believe the federal government has a legitimate role in anything except raising an army. He hasn't changed any of those opinions. So I mean, when he starts talking about how, you know, the rich get richer and the middle class gets ground up, he's not in favor of any federal policies that might do anything about that. And we've seen how well things work in the states on that regard. So I mean, they're all gonna make a pass at this. I mean, they all should send Elizabeth Warren a check right now.
Right.
Because she cleared she and a number of other people, Sherrod Brown, have cleared the field for this. But the Republican Party has no more a real solution to that than they have one to health care.
It is interesting, though.
They're going to make the right neck noises and hope nobody notices.
It is interesting that they're talking about it, though, right?
And talking about it very directly. It's just that they have no policies that are going to be, you know, that will remotely solve the problem. Deregulating the economy and devolving federal functions back to the states are not going to solve the income inequality problem. They're going to make them inevitably worse.
But do you think this? I mean, what do you think this does in terms of setting up the general election? I mean, do you think look, you know, because in some ways, I mean, literally, you have to break it down into sort of like almost like brackets on the Republican side, because there's now like I think like I don't know
there's
how
10
many
now. There's 10 now.
There's only. No, there's 10. I think there's 11 officially.
Maybe there's 11 now, yeah.
But we still have Jeb is going to announce. We still have, like, at least Bobby Jindal is going to announce.
Scott Walker hasn't announced yet.
Scott Walker hasn't announced yet. I mean, we still have at least like four or five that I can tick off the top of my head. And Trump, I think, is going to announce. I think we could see even more, frankly, because, you know, I've been saying this for a while, the downside diminishes every time someone new jumps into the race.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, I mean, you're now looking at, you know, if everybody gets in, you're looking at a situation where 14% or less than 20% could win the New Hampshire primary.
Right.
I mean, it wouldn't take that much.
And if you lose, you're not the guy who lost the New Hampshire primary, because they don't even have time to say your name because there's 15 of you who lost.
That's right. And of course, in the new world we live in of campaign finance, it really doesn't matter if you win or lose as long as you keep your sugar daddy.
Exactly. And that seems to be long-term. All right, so let's look at, you know, I want to talk about some of the guys you wrote about this week. Scott Walker, it seems like there's like 14 investigations around this guy at any given time, and nothing quite has landed yet.
Well, I mean, you know, he's arranged Wisconsin politics, so it's hard to land a punch. But he's one of the governors who's going to run, despite the fact he's immensely unpopular in his own state. And really, the only one of those guys who possibly could run for president who has an unmistakably popular support in his own state is John Kasich.
Yes, and
New Jersey's sick of Christie. Louisiana's very sick of Jindal. Wisconsin has grown very sick of Scott Walker.
I think Kasich is actually he is my sleeper fear, frankly, because he's a guy is if he does get on the debate on the dais with all those other folks, I think he is the most well spoken of all of them. Like he is direct.
He's also the guy who took the Medicaid money.
Yep.
He tried to do the same thing Walker did with the unions, and he lost. And he, you know, sort of sucked it up and accepted his loss and moved on from there. You know, he's running, of course. His primary issue is the worst idea in American politics, which is the balanced budget amendment to the Constitution.
Right. But that,
which is just a terrible freaking idea.
It's a horrible idea, but it really resonates with those people. And people forget, too, that this guy was one of the original guys on Fox TV.
Sure. And he was, you know, and they also have forgotten that he ran for president once before. Didn't get anywhere. But, you know, as a very young member of Congress, he ran for president.
I didn't even remember that.
Yeah. I mean, very briefly, but he did. And I think in one of the Clinton years, I think probably 96. But, he's extraordinarily good on television. He's, you know, he's got a record in Ohio that's nowhere near as dismal as the other governors.
Yeah.
And he's got a little bit of gravitas, which the other guys don't have.
It's interesting. I don't know that he has declared yet. We also forgot about Christie declaring, although that seems to be, I mean, I'm convinced at this point that if Christie declares, it is specifically to negotiate something away with federal prosecutors. Just so
he's gonna be sentenced to run for president.
Well, I think he says, like, look, guys, instead of like actually trying to send me to jail, how about this? I quit my presidential campaign. You know, I mean, I think it's just one more thing to give away, right?
That would be unprecedented, I think.
I mean,
that's another thing that astonished me on Thursday when Rick Perry announced. Nobody mentioned the guy is indicted.
Oh, that's right.
I don't think anybody's ever run for president while under indictment.
That's impressive. I mean,
Walker and Christie are only under investigation. Perry's been indicted.
I wonder
nobody
if
nobody mentioned it.
Do you think that's going to be like a pitch?
Well, I think it's a fairly salient fact, don't you?
It seems like it would be, but also, you know, because he's bold enough to stand up to these pencil pushers.
I guess, but the man is under indictment. There's a mugshot.
He's smiling, though, at least in it. That is impressive. I totally forgot about that.
It's gone down the memory hole.
That's right. I mean, because it's not been in any of the coverage. I mean, I've been reading about it, and he was just indicted like two months ago?
It was not that long ago at all. I think it's about 6 or 8 weeks, yeah.
Wow. Well, I guess NBC did actually, you know, there is a couple of stories you can see out there where it's like, this is like a funny, I know, it's like one of those like Vox cards that they put out. Just sort of an explainer. He's also under indictment. I don't know. Give me your sense of what, you know, we can anticipate. I'm curious as to what you think is going to happen next. I mean, obviously August 15th, we get the first debate. So that's only 2 months away.
Yeah.
I mean, so this is actually becoming real now.
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, you're going to have this flow. You know, we now have, We now have the new ritual, which is that you announce that you're going to announce, and then you announce.
Well,
so you stay in the news cycle.
That's a function of, there was a story out, I don't know, it was earlier this week, that essentially not only is the, because we heard this a while back, the Federal Elections Commission, they're not even going to try and uphold federal election. But even the Department of Justice is saying, like, if we do anything, it's not going to be this cycle.
No, I mean, the money has overwhelmed almost all of the, you know, it's blown through all the safety valves at this point.
It's crazy.
The FEC is understaffed. They've been undercut by the Supreme Court. The election reform has no place to stand right now, which is why I give, former Secretary Clinton a lot of credit for talking not only about Citizens United, but on Thursday going down to Texas and talking about voter suppression.
Right.
Because she didn't have to do that. And those are two very big issues.
They are big issues. I'm curious as to whether or not you think that ultimately, I mean,
I don't know that they bite. You know, I don't know that they move the poll numbers at all.
No.
But if you don't fix it, the rest of the issues don't matter.
It's true. I mean, it's clear that it's one thing to say it now, 2 years out or a year and a half out from the election. I mean, I don't know that it becomes policy. I mean, it's interesting to me. It seems like she is sort of right now, she's basically staying away from the press. I can't say as I blame her at this point, and just coming out every couple of weeks with a proposal that is, I certainly appreciate as someone who I perceive to be left of where Clinton is. She's coming out with these proposals that I think are sort of aimed at, on some level, people like me, right, who are paying attention.
I mean, 20 days of early voting?
Right.
That's a lot.
Standardized across the country. I mean,
and again, you know, standardizing federal elections across the country, that's going to make, you know, the 10th Amendment people crazy.
Well, and also what it does is it basically ensconces, because there is really no federal right to vote.
No, that's absolutely true. Scalia was right about that, by the way.
And this would at least provide some type of statutory basis, right?
Right.
For the vote.
And she's not just talking the talk. She's got her lawyers in court right now challenging some of these laws.
Yes. And I think
particularly the one in Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin, right. And obviously that's going to help her out. But it's also happens to.
It's also really good policy.
Good policy for democracy. What's fascinating to me, too, about this, about the sort of the complete, I guess, surrender on our campaign laws, you know, Jeb Bush is like clearly violating, you know, this whole thing, like it's an exploratory committee, like you're only supposed to spend, I think, like $5,000 or something like that to really determine whether or not you want to do it. And it seems quite clear that he's done a lot of exploring and it's been a lot more expensive than $5,000.
Yeah, I mean, his explorations are costing as much as the Apollo program at this point.
What? Give me your sense of how this shakes down. Do you have any sense of? I mean, are you?
I think you saw it. I think that, you know, the people in charge with enforcing what few campaign finance laws we have left have given up. They don't have the time, the staff, or the money themselves to keep up.
I wonder what they're doing in those offices now.
I have no idea. I mean, I think they're basically keeping their heads down.
It's like I don't want to be your desk editor, but I see a great George Plimpton style where you go and hang out with them for a couple of days and see what they're doing. I mean, what, you know, once you've basically announced like, hey, we're not going to do anything, which is what they've done. They've said like we can't do anything about it. Like, what do you do around the office at that point?
I don't know. Play Brick Breaker on your phone, I guess.
I mean, that just seems – it just seems crazy. On one hand, like, I can appreciate at least they're being honest, right? And the head of this agency doesn't want to pretend like, the guard's on duty, I guess, right?
Yeah.
But once the value of that announcement wears off, which – you know, I would count the number of people who saw that announcement in the tens, maybe across the country. there's not, you know, the only other people who are paying attention are the people who are like, oh, I mean, I guess, you know, I guess from her perspective, I think it's a she. She was like, those people who would pay attention to this notice and are running these campaigns already don't care.
Yeah. And I think it's, I think that's tragic. I really do. I don't think there's anything funny about it.
It's crazy. It really is crazy to me. Give me your sense of who you think is going to come out. I mean, do you have any, I'm not going to say predictions because obviously it's ridiculous to predict anything at this point, but do you have a feeling of who might ultimately be, you know, the beauty is you can say the top five and you've already winnowed down by 75% at that point.
Well, that's a good point. I think Walker's going to make a really good run.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately Jeb will take over that position that Mitt Romney had the last time around as the eye of Sauron and have so much money that sooner or later he concentrates on everybody and just obliterates them.
It's interesting.
If you want a really long distance prediction, I still think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I have a feeling the Koch brothers money is going to make a big difference in Scott Walker's campaign.
Oh, I think he's going to have a really good run. I think he's going to go through the whole process because of that.
Vice President Walker, maybe.
Well, theoretically that would help Jeb, I guess, but I don't think it puts Wisconsin in play.
No, I think it's just a matter of like how much, you know.
I mean, you may recall the last time around, Paul Ryan didn't even carry his home precinct.
I do remember that, and believe me, I understand why Paul Ryan stayed in the Congress after watching what's going on here. I think he's probably it's probably one of the smartest things he's ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie, always a pleasure to talk.
Hey,
to
you. Sam, it's been great. We'll talk again.
Okay, thanks again.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Bye. Charlie Pierce, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we are going to head into the fun half of the program where Matt and Michael are going to take over for me as I'm not even here. I know, it's freaking you out. Don't worry about it. Even the people on YouTube can see me. What we're doing is just crazy today. Folks, don't forget that it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member today at majority.fm. Also, Credo, our sponsor, for just a couple more weeks. Not even a couple more weeks. Not even a couple more weeks. Really? Less than 10 days. You can get this deal from Credo Mobile. Go to credomobile.com/majority report. They got a great deal for you. It's a great company that really genuinely helps progressive causes. We're going to talk to Becky Bond again next week, both on what Credo does, but also I want to get an update on what we're happening with TPP. And she's got a great piece out that she's written about the fight over the Patriot Act / Freedom Act. I can't believe it. I can see those names just drive me crazy. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. If you buy crap from Amazon, the least you can do is use our link. Go to majorityreportkickback.com, click on the link, bookmark it, and buy your crap through that link. We get a little kickback. Every little bit helps. The number is 646-257-3920. Matt and Michael will be taking your number, your calls. You can IM us at Majority FM on AIM or any of your instant message clients, or pick up the app at majorityapp.com. Give us a review on iTunes. Also, have a good weekend. Stick around if you're a member. We got more.